Paul Auster, thank you so much for talking to Rhode Island Public Radio. Welcome to Rhode Island.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here, even though the weather is somewhat gloomy, but it's gloomy in New York, too.
Is it? Yeah. I lived in Brooklyn for a while, and not long after leaving, I read your New York trilogy and just started following you off and on, read The Music of Chance and The Book of Illusions. Did you grow up in New York, in Brooklyn?
No, my mother did, but I didn't. I grew up in New Jersey. I was born in Newark and grew up in the suburbs around Newark and then wound up in Newark towards the end of my high school days. So very close to New York. My grandparents were still there, and I went into the city a lot. So I didn't actually grow up there, but it was part of my childhood and adolescence.
I, too, am from New Jersey. I was born in East Orange and grew up in the suburbs and eventually ended up, for a time anyway, in New York. So we have a lot in common there.
It's almost the same path because the town I spent the most time in as a kid was South Orange, which borders on East Orange. And for a time when I was a baby, we lived in an apartment in East Orange also. So we come from the same neck of the woods.
Well, I've enjoyed reading your stuff over the years. What are you planning to read today?
What I'm reading today is something that goes way, way back, about 40 years ago. I wrote a book called Winter Journal about 8 years ago, I think it came out, which is an autobiographical book. And in that book, I talk about the circumstances under which this piece was written and how important it was to me. It's a very short passage, and then I'm going to read the piece itself, which is called White Spaces, which was a breakthrough for me after a bad period of writer's block and depression and frustration, and something was unleashed, and it came out in this little 8-page text called White Spaces that I look at as the bridge into all the work I did after. And since we're celebrating a writer, Bob Coover, I thought, well, I'll do something about the origins of my life as a prose writer.
I asked him how he got his start, and he told me that when he was 5, he was already putting together the family newspaper and writing stories about everybody in the family and entertaining him in that way. So it sounds like for him, it really began early. How about you?
Well, me too. I have to say, I don't think at 5 I was capable of doing such a thing. But by the time I was about 9, I can remember writing my first poem. I was walking through a little park in South Orange called Grove Park. Maybe you even know it. And I was walking from my house into the town. It was a Saturday morning, beautiful early spring day. And I felt so happy about the change of seasons that I went into town, I bought a little notebook and a pencil, and I went back to the park and wrote a poem about spring. A truly wretched poem. I think probably one of the worst things ever written by a human being. But what happened to me in doing this, and this is something I discovered at 9, is the act of trying to express myself in words about what I was experiencing in space made me feel so connected to the world around me in ways that I had never felt before. And I think that was what was so entrancing about the act of writing, was that feeling of connectedness. And I think that's what I still seek. I think if I weren't writing, I wouldn't feel connected the way I do to the world. It's a way in to things that are not yourself, which is, I think, where all the power of good writing lies, in that bridging and reaching out towards other people and other things.
And we're here celebrating Bob Coover. Do you have any Coover stories?
Well, you know, the fact is, and this is a truth that maybe not everyone was aware of, when writers get together, they never talk about writing. Very, very little. But my favorite story about Bob is this, that in addition to being the master prose writer that he is and the distinguished teacher with so many generations of students who are indebted to him, he's a great connoisseur of wine. And I think Bob never won a literary award in France, but he got an award for being knowledgeable about wine, some kind of medal. And so I asked Bob, how did you learn about French wine? And he told me the story, which is fascinating. He said, so I didn't know what I was doing, he said. So what I would do, I got a map of France, and I would drink a bottle of wine. And if I liked the bottle, I would find out where it was made, and I'd put a pin on the village where it came from. And then I'd say, well, let's go to the next village and see if the wine is just as good or if not better. And bit, by experimenting, sort of an empirical way of trying to understand what the different regions gave and the different localities, he began to become a very subtle expert on all the nuances of French wine. I just felt that it was a wonderful way to go about it.
That sounds like something he could actually publish and sell.
I think so. I don't know if people today have the patience to do what he did, because he wasn't reading what other people told him to think. He was drawing his own conclusions by tasting every damn bottle he could get his hands on.
Now, where do you fall in discussing postmodernism, whether or not it's over and what's next?
I don't think about these things at all. I mean, these terms are inventions of scholars and literary critics, and they don't really mean anything. I mean, in my time, I've been called postmodernist. I've been called post-postmodernist. I have no idea what they're talking about. I'm just doing the best I can, given the way I'm looking at the world. And if it fits into somebody's schema about what it is, well, fine for them. But it really has nothing to do with me.
Well, the way I understand it, in the very simple way, is that as a postmodernist, you're concerned with story, but you're also concerned with how the story is made, what goes into making it, and you make that kind of process visible in the writing as opposed to just telling a story. Does that have any validity as far as you know?
Well, I think so, probably, perhaps. It's just that I would think this is true of all writers, of all great writers from the very beginning, all the way back to the Greeks and through, you know, the Renaissance. And you don't think Dante is showing us how he's writing it, the Divine Comedy? Of course he is. He's invented a new rhyme scheme, the Terza Rima. He's doing this. He's showing it. He may be not broadcasting it, but it's embedded in the work. He's saying, look, this is a new way to make verse. I myself, I have to say, am very fascinated by exposing the plumbing, so to speak. Sometimes, mm-hmm. Not always. But sometimes it's a very interesting way to get into or somehow to break through the illusion that it's real, because books are not real. We know that. But I think there are earlier novels that expose the mechanisms too. One of the great books, and Siri and I talk about it a lot, is Wuthering Heights, a tremendous novel by a very young woman. And it is written in such a complex, interesting, interlocking series of narrators, diaries, letters, things found in drawers. Of course she's exposing the works there. And this is in, you know, the mid-19th century. Or Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter, with that long preface in the Custom House. He's setting it up. He's saying, well, this is something that is from the past, i.e. imaginary. And so, I don't know. There's nothing new in literature. People think there is, but most things have been discovered, and they're just being rethought in new ways, perhaps. But the bedrock has always been there, all these possibilities. And you could say that the first novel, the first really important novel in the Western tradition, Don Quixote, is the novel that contains everything that everyone did in any novel since. And the second part of Don Quixote is most definitely what we would call a postmodern novel, and that was written in the early 1600s.
Any thoughts on Bob Cooper effects on your work?
I read him early. I was probably still a teenager, student in college, or maybe just hitting 20, somewhere in there. And the first thing I read was his wonderful novel, The Universal Baseball Association, J. Henry Waugh Prop, which I happen to love baseball. and was, of course, reading all kinds of new writers. And this was one of the great books for me at the moment. And I was just so illuminated by the sharpness of the mind and the quality of the writing. So after that, I continued. I haven't read every single book, but I've read probably 85% of what Bob has done. And I have my favorites among them. And I think his great masterpiece is The Public Burning, which is a book from, I suppose, the mid to late 70s. I'm not exactly sure. It's a monster of brilliance. And I think he combines in that book a kind of very sharp eye for realistic truth. I mean, all the passages about Nixon, and then the fantastical execution of the Rosenbergs in Times Square. It's an American 20th century masterpiece.
Paul Auster, thank you so much for the time. Thanks for talking to us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.